VoiceOver describes what's happening on your iPhone screen.
VoiceOver on, settings.
So you can navigate it just by listening.
Books, contacts, calendar, double tap to open. Breakfast with Anna from 10 to 11.
And get on with your day. Accessibility, there's more to iPhone.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Hello and welcome to the Game Podcast from The Times. I'm Alison Rudd, a planned substitute for Gab Marcotti, who is currently mastering his nose grabs and falling leaves on his snowboard. Today we'll be talking about what happened when Spurs went to Anfield, when Leicester went to Wales, and we will debate the enigma that is Arsene Wenger. I'm joined in the studio by, as luck would have it, a former Leicester striker in the form of James Scowcroft, and by, as luck would have it, a compatriot of Wenger in Julien Laurent. And down the line, we are simply lucky to have the super clever Bill Edgar. I say super clever, Bill, because I mean, just a tiny example of how clever you are. There's this beautiful statistic in the paper today. Sunderland are the first team for nearly 60 years to win away by at least 4 goals in the top flight and then lose at home by at least 4 in the next game. I'm sure somebody somewhere thought that's a bit weird, how Sunderland can be great one minute and then terrible the next. But you put figures on it. I love
yes,
it.
Yes, well, thank you very much.
Yes,
well, I'm sort of constantly looking for little oddities like that, and I just wonder, how has that happened before? How long could it have happened? A long time before? Is it worth researching it? You know, that's been my life doing, unfortunately, sadly.
Well, it's a bumper episode, and we start with Liverpool's 2-0 victory over Tottenham. It was the Mane show at Anfield, with lots of subtext. One of the most obvious being that Pochettino, he wanted to sign Mane, and Daniel Levy's chairman said, oh, no, his wages, far too big. And when, after the game, Pochettino said he's working with different tools than the rest of the top four, I wondered if he probably had that in mind. Is he slightly hamstrung by being at a club where they do look at the purse strings? James, do you think that's what he was getting at?
Certainly was, wasn't it? You just have to read between the lines and you look at it. It's always been Tottenham's problem, isn't it? Their strength in depth that they haven't got and other teams have got, really. And especially when you get to this end of the season, it's the business end of the season that starts as well. And they've got cup games. They've got the Europa League coming up as well. And he must be looking at it thinking, I need more players here. And they've just been beaten by a player who scored 2 goals that he probably wanted in the summer. The frustration and everything has come out. So always going to be Tottenham's problem, really, that can they compete? Can they pay the big wages and the big transfer fees? And, you know, Daniel Levy's a very, very good negotiator, but sometimes you have to pay over the odds to get the players you want.
Yes, indeed. Bill, I mean, also after the game, Wijnaldum said, he sort of said, well, don't go on and on about Mane. He did play very well, but, you know, it is a team game. I mean, how impressed were you by, and are you by Mane, Bill? But do you think it might be counterproductive, as Ronaldo seemed to be intimating, for it to be tagged as the Mane show?
Yeah, he's a great player. He was pretty much from day one at Southampton. His talent was there for all to see. Perhaps a bit less consistent than he is now, but certainly brings that extra dimension to Liverpool. I think he fits their play perfectly because Liverpool's, the great attraction is their irresistible attacking football at high speed, and when it comes off, it's the best in the country. Nobody can stop it, and he has that acceleration that the other players don't quite have. But he has amazing acceleration. He was the big difference, certainly on Saturday.
Do you have any Mane stats you can wow us with?
Not Turner. I was getting very excited when it looked like he was going to get another very quick hat trick to match his hat trick against Aston Villa for Southampton a couple of years ago. And they both came at almost exactly the same point of the game, around the 16th minute. So it was close, but it didn't quite happen.
So it's too easy to just call it the Mane show. But Julian, it was also from Spurs' point of view, it was that, oh, Ben Davis can't cope was the narrative, which and it seems to me that even if Danny Rose had been there, we don't know, but it seemed to me, I'm quite a big fan of Ben Davis. I think it's a bit unfair to lump it all on him.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think a lot of left backs have struggled against Sadio Mane this season, and even at Southampton, like Bill was saying. I think Rose would have had more pace, and we saw on the first goal that poor Ben Davis, it looked like he was, you know, trailing a caravan behind him or something, because he, you know, he started. I still think that he could have maybe, you know, tried to play him offside, and then he wanted to go with him and he was maybe 2 yards ahead, and then he ended up being five behind, which I do think that Rose's pace would have helped a lot. I think that they should have played with three at the back or five at the back, Spurs. I don't really understand why Wimmer was on the bench, and Davis could have played probably better, I think, as a left wing back than he did at that left back position, because you knew from the start it was going to be him against Mane, and you, from the start, looking at the lineup, you thought, oh, I don't fancy Ben Davis against Mane, and I think he shows.
James, I mean, what does Pochettino do now? I mean, I like the way he manages and the way he conducts himself and the way his tactics. I like his whole approach to the game. My one criticism of him has been that he doesn't seem capable of juggling competitions. It now seems he's incapable of juggling injuries within a single competition, the Premier League. Does he even start thinking, well, if I really am writing off the Premier League, I should try and win the Europa League? Or does he rest everybody for the Europa League? What should his approach be now? Otherwise, he's in danger of the season petering out, and all it being about is that, oh, look, Spurs managed to grab a top four place.
Well, I think if they got a top four place, they've had a good season. I think especially if you see the competition this year, that, you know, two big sides, two big managers are going to miss out on Champions League football. I think that has to be his number one goal. I don't think they're going to win the title. I think that's, you know, it's Chelsea's really, isn't it? Only Chelsea can throw that away, really. For me, they're at a bit of a crossroads. I think he's done a fantastic job, Pochettino. And I think now, if Daniel Levy wants to keep him, and they're going to go into the new stadium, they need to reinvent themselves a little bit now. So, i.e., they need quality. They need more players. So you can, you know, a little bit like Manchester United, the depth they have in the squad. You know, if it's Rashford one week, it might be then Martial the following week. And I think sometimes they rely far too much on Harry Kane, far too much on Eriksen, far too much on the fullbacks, the goalkeeper. And I think these players as well need help. He has to focus on the league. He has to focus on, I know you can win this Europa League and we can get in the back door there, but I think Tottenham are equipped to finish fourth, really. So I think that should be his priority. And if you actually look at their remaining away games, because they've really struggled away from home against the good sides, they've only got West Ham, really, which is in the top. So it's Palace, Burnley, Swansea, Leicester, West Ham, Hull are the away fixtures. So they're all winnable. I would say if I was him and I was that team, I would solely focus on the league, everything else second.
Moving on to Liverpool, Bill, Klopp's been grinning about this a lot, but can they win every single game left and put real pressure on Chelsea? Is there a twist in the tail to come, do you think?
I doubt it very much. I mean, that they are, that even if they were to win the remaining 13 games, I mean, they still probably wouldn't win the title. Chelsea would still get it. I mean, when they're on form, their attacking football is irresistible, like no other team in the country. But they're not quite consistent enough, and they can't really control matches, not in the way that Chelsea or even Manchester United can. They can't just shut down games, and I think that's going to be a problem for them. That's why I feel they were never really realistic title contenders. But next season, maybe another season, you know, Klopp's feet under the table, then maybe next season.
I was really, really angry last week on the podcast after the whole game, as a Liverpool fan. But I'm all beaming smiles now, Julian. Am I being stupid?
No, you're not. You know, I think you knew they would be back to their best. And also you knew that Spurs would play into their hands, because there's one thing, you can't go to Anfield and think that you can play them off the park and that you can play a high line at the back and you can try to play on the ball and not win second balls and third balls and then you get thrashed. And I think Spurs were even lucky. I don't hope that for Liverpool fans and for you, Alisson, but surely every single team that's going to go to Liverpool next will know that the only way, if you want to get something there, and there's a way, is to just be solid and just hit them on the counter. Because once you try to play too much, they put so much pressure in midfield and up front, and they've got those great runners, and the movement on the ball and off the ball offensively is so good. There's no chance. The only chance is to exploit the fragility they've got at the back. And for that, the counter attacking style, for me, is the best one. And Spurs just missed it completely. Tactically, I thought they were so poor. Pochettino was so poor. And I thought that was perfect for Klopp, who I think knew that that's the way Spurs would play, and that he knew exactly how to beat them. And their game plan worked so well.
Do they have a plan B, Liverpool?
No, they don't.
Exactly.
So if you look at their fixture list, sorry, last point, look at their fixture list, their running isn't too bad. They've got Arsenal at home, Man City away, they're probably the two hardest. The Merseyside derby, Liverpool at home, but you'd fancy them. But they're playing a lot of teams that have got a lot to play for, especially down at the bottom. If teams come to Anfield and they park the bus and say, go on, and we're going to defend so deep, so you can't get in behind us, you can't counter-attack on us, we're going to five at the back, four in midfield, what do Liverpool do then?
Right, let's go to the Liberty Stadium, where Swansea defeated Leicester City 2-0. The obvious juicy debating points are the form of Leicester. We'll get to that in a minute. Let's just make sure we do not ignore Swansea, because this was your classic six-pointer. I tweeted early on, because what really struck me was how calm Swansea were. This was a relegation crucial fight, and they, I mean, I know swans tend to look elegant on top of the water and they're paddling away underneath, and maybe that was what was really going on, but they looked very calm, as if they'd been really well prepared by their manager. It was as if he'd said to them, look, you are the better team, you're the informed team, remember how you played against Liverpool, forget that they won the title. And that's how it panned out. I suspect nobody on the podcast today is going to say that they think Swansea is still in trouble. I do not think that they are. Bill, do you think they're still in trouble?
No, they certainly seem to have hit form at a good time. Although they've never, I must say, they've never looked really bad this season in the worst moments. They've always looked as though they've had something about them, and they've got the experience of being in the Premier League for quite some time now. So they are really at heart a mid-table club. And with Gylfi Sigurdsson as the kind of the pivot in the number 10 role, sometimes out to the left, I mean, he's a real class act. And when he's playing to his normal ability, then they've always got a good chance. And also Leroy Fer is another impressive player in central midfield, good, strong character, and he was really good yesterday. And of course, the back four, that's where their problems have been earlier this season. Paul Clement has settled upon this new back four, Norton, Fernandes, Mawson, and Olsen. You know, when Olsen came from the Championship, from Norwich, it looked like a bit of a gamble. He thought, well, maybe Olsen's had his day, but he's come in and played really well. So I guess the Paul Clem's biggest achievement is really creating a real good structure about Swansea's defence, and they look very solid, and it's looking good for them now.
Hear, hear. Anyone want to disagree before we move on to the problems?
I don't think they're out of trouble. Would you say they're out of trouble, Swansea?
No, there's still some tough game coming up. There's one against Hull, for example. You know, in 2 games' time, they still have to play United and Arsenal away, I think, or something like that. So but they look so well organised. They look better now. And
they're playing Chelsea away. How do you see
that one going? Chelsea away is the next game. So
yeah, so it's no, they have tough games, and you lose one, and someone behind you.
They've got to go to Hull. They've got Middlesbrough at home.
There's tough games still coming up. They're only 4 points clear of the bottom three. It's not that huge. So
I just think from my experiences, the problems that have haunted you all season are only just around the corner, if you take your sort of your eye off the ball, really. You know, they've obviously had problems. They've had, you know, a lot of disruption this season. They've not been the Swansea of old. They've looked disorganised, blah, blah, blah. Those problems aren't too far away. So I think it's very, very silly of any team that goes on a little bit of a run, all of a sudden gets a little bit of daylight to think, oh, we're home and dry now, because those problems can soon come back.
Which I don't think they will, from what I've I was told they work. Paul Clement is working them really, really, really hard, and Claude Makélélé is helping a lot. I had to give a bit of love to Claude. So.
And they're also very lucky, Swansea, in that Gylfi Sigurdsson never gets injured.
Never.
To add to the long list of things he does that are marvellous.
The pass on the Olsson goal is just, I mean, the whole movement, that one touch, double triangle, but the pass from Sigurdsson is special.
Okay, all that's very beautiful. And now on to something that's really quite ugly. How can the champions of England not score a goal in 2017? How can they look so disorganised? You know, Claudio Ranieri eventually says maybe he's been too loyal to the team that won the title. With hindsight, seems to me what Ranieri should have done was ship out a lot of the players that did win the title. It's what Shankly used to do, and people used to go, oh, but they just won the title. How can you be thinking about reinvigorating the side like that? He has been loyal. At the time, nobody said you shouldn't be. But with hindsight, it does seem that he's finally admitted he's been sticking with the same patterns, and the patterns need to be different this time around. James, you know Leicester very well. You played with them and you've got a bit of inside knowledge too. What is really going on?
I think there's many, many factors that's going on, Alison. I think it's hard to point to one and say that's a problem. I think their mentality this season has been wrong. You know, what they achieved last season was a fairy tale. Where are they now?
That's really interesting. Can I stop you there? So that was predictable, the who are we now syndrome.
Mm.
That has to be Ranieri's fault for not acknowledging that would happen and thinking of a clever way, given that he didn't shove out the people who are going to be more tired and this season. He's kept with them. If you're going to keep with the same team, you have to acknowledge that's a problem and find a clever way to solve it. And it looks from the outside like he didn't.
What you need to do, you need to keep with the same team. You can't get rid of players that have just won you the league.
And you can.
Well, if you did that and they're in the position you are now, I think people will be saying you're absolutely.
Well, he wouldn't be in the job now.
Exactly. What I think you need to do is go and get a real backup for Jamie Vardy and say, hey, here's your new contract, you deserve it. But if you're not doing it, I've got someone who's a replacement here that's going to be straight in the team. So you need real competition for places, which they haven't got. They're relying on the same formations, really, the same people that A, got them out of trouble 18 months ago, won them the league. You can't keep relying on the same players. You know, these players look absolutely shot to me. So with the Champions League, with everything else that's going around, with the sort of the circus that surrounded them still with this tale. And all of a sudden, Jamie Carragher hit the nail on the head 2 weeks ago, I think. This is only half the story now. If they get relegated, the Leicester sort of 2-3 year story is going to be champions but also relegated. And I think the mentality has been poor. They've approached the season in the wrong way. They should have said, right, this is where we are. Can we get to 40 points? Get to 40 points, get to 60 points. Going back to what's got them where they are. Lack of very, very good recruitment. Everyone says that when you're in a position of strength, you have to strengthen again, which I don't think they've done. Some of them could have gone to clubs last year. Jamie Vardy was on the verge of going to Arsenal, but didn't quite happen. He's probably thinking, well, you know, if I was at Arsenal now, this, that and the other.
But so, Arsenal are thinking, thank goodness we didn't sign Jamie Vardy, though.
Well, maybe not, really. I just think the whole mindset of the club is wrong, and they need to change it now. And if I was even coming out last week and saying, we back Claudio, and why on earth do you do that? It just brings more attention on yourself. Every single manager in the Premier League is under pressure. So why come out and back your manager? There's no need to. It's a results business. He's not getting results. A few Leicester fans I follow on social media, a lot of them want Claudio Ranieri out. You know, and these are true fans that go to every game home and away. They're not the pundits that just see a little snapshot of what is going on at the football club here. I really do fear for them. I really, really do. And I think they've got a little bit of big-time mentality about them, and they're in big, big trouble.
Julian, would it work to get rid of Claudio now?
I think he would, yeah. I would get rid of him. I would have got rid of him
think
before.
That's the only answer to get rid of him. And you need a new manager to come in and say, right, we start again here.
I agree. I would have got rid of him even before the FA Cup replay game against Derby. And I'm surprised he's still there. I think there's something broken between him and the dressing room. There's no doubt about that at all. And I think you might not believe everything you read in the papers, but there's so many stories that we've all heard here from different sources everywhere, whatever newspaper you work for, even like me, a French one, players are starting to talk a lot off the record, and all those stories can only be true. And I really think there's an issue between him and most of the dressing room, you know, maybe not the whole dressing room, but most of it. And I still don't understand why what he does. I mean, yesterday, taking Simpson off and put Amati on for the last 20 minutes, what's the point? I think he's lost it. I mean, last season was incredible, but this year I think he's been dreadful as a manager.
Bill, do you think it's a case of Leicester won the title without Ranieri needing to be too clever or too tinkering, and now he needs to be clever? The players and him, as Julian says, there's a gulf there. There is no connection.
Well, I certainly think there's no reason not to sack him just because he won the title last year. I mean, you're simply thinking about how well is he going to do in the last 13 games. What happened last year has no bearing on that. You don't make your decision based on what's fair or what seems nice just because he did so well last season. I happen to think that if they were to go down or even just survive this season, it actually improves the story, the overall story, because it just goes to show how unlikely it was last season. If they'd have, say, finished fourth this season and for the next few years been fourth or fifth, then you could have said, well, they were just really a good team anyway, and it was just they just made a sudden jump to get there. But now to drop dramatically back to where they were initially, and this is where we expected them to be last year. They're 17th now. We expected them to be about 17th last season. But to drop so dramatically just shows how unlikely it was, and how it was just a team of pretty average players who somehow got 81 points in one season. To me, that's just great. That it's just a bit like on a smaller scale, a bit like Manchester United when Ferguson left. The fact that they suddenly fell away, having either won the title or been within a couple of kicks of the title for 7 years in a row. Next 3 years, they were nowhere near. That just added to his legend. So in one way, I'm quietly enjoying this, not least, of course, from a stats point of view. I mean, it's such a brilliant fall. And it's been mentioned that there's been one other team that's dropped from winning the title to going down the next season, Manchester City in 1937-38. But in one way, Leicester's fall is much more dramatic, because then the gap between the top and bottom was very little. It was only 21 points from top to bottom in that Manchester City season, if you adjust to 3 points for a win in the 38-game season. So it wasn't so dramatic. So this is, stats-wise, this is much better in that sense. But it's strange to think how they've gone from last season to this season. What is the difference in play? And you just think that everything was done at such high speed last season. They had the confidence to play right on the edge. And they just have that tiny doubt in their minds this time. They dwell for a split second before passing the ball on first time. I'm sure N'Golo Conte's departure has been a factor. Not only is he a great player, obviously, but he just sets the tempo. He's darting around, closing down the opposition, but also with counter-attacks. He'd always first-time pass, if ever he had the chance, first-time pass straight away. So that just set the tempo for Leicester. It's a big loss, but of course it doesn't really explain such a big fall, of course.
No.
But anyway.
James, as a striker, Jamie Vardy's not had a shot on target since mid-December. Is that because he just isn't focusing correctly, or is it just that if you're a striker and your team aren't functioning properly, you don't stand a chance of getting a shot on target?
I think it's many different factors. It's a mindset, it's a confidence thing, it's service from your teammates. To go from where he was last season, and I saw a lot of him last season. I was there the day that he broke the Premier League record, scoring 11 goals in 11 games, I think it was. And he was just a player that was so on top of his game. You can see it, and he's just a pale shadow. And it does happen. It happens to a lot of players. And I just think his lack of experience of being at a top club, playing for your country, this, that and the other, is sort of almost costing him, really. And all of a sudden now he's got himself in a horrible position where I don't think he scores. Is it one goal in 24 games or something? The stat is incredible. And like you say, he hasn't had a shot on target since December. Well, wow, you know, you think your next game, you just have a shot and just hit the target. I think, well, I've got that monkey off my back. I don't know. I think a lot of these players, I think he's even done it and hasn't worked this season. A little spell on the bench, you think, come here, get out the firing line, let somebody else do it. But they haven't got the backup, Leicester. They haven't got that, someone in the wings, really. They've got this Damari Gray that's come on, and all of a sudden now he's, picking up a little bit, and he seems to be their one bright spark. They need more players like that. So people like Vardy, right, you're not playing until you show a little bit of what you showed last season.
Maybe it's just an average striker. And I know. Remember last season when we did at the end of last season we did our team of the season with Gab. I'm sure you were here, no?
Probably.
And we did the team of the season. And we got to striker, and basically it was either Harry Kane or Jamie Vardy. And I said, right, are we talking about a proper striker, a proper footballer? There's no debate. I said there was no debate for me between Kane and Vardy. I got so much abuse from Leicester fans, and I didn't want to upset anyone, but Jamie Vardy has one thing in his game, right? You can't even compare him with Harry Kane. And you said it happens to strikers. It doesn't happen to great strikers. Great strikers don't go from one amazing season to one good in 24 games. No great strikers do that.
No, but Harry Kane's
average not, strikers do that.
Yeah,
average
but Harry Kane isn't at a Leicester City. Ibrahimovic isn't at a Leicester City.
No, true. What Vardy did last year with Leicester City was great, fantastic.
Yeah, and he should have got in the team of the year last year because he for me, he was the player of the season last year. I saw him for a spell either side of Christmas and he was unplayable.
But that was not his level.
He couldn't play.
His level
and
is
I also
season.
Saw him at the end of the season where he was going through a bit of a drought. I saw him at Crystal Palace and his work rate, they won 1-0, Mahrez scored, and it was probably the first sort of thing you think these are actually going to win the title here. His work rate was phenomenal.
Yeah, and maybe there's
absolutely
less
phenomenal
of that.
And he's just lost it all. Not only him, I think it's unfair to single him out, but I think a few of them, the defence is, where the real problem is at the moment. They're conceding goals, they look awful at the back. They're in a massive rut, and I'm not sure. I think the only way they can get out of it, and I feel sorry for Ranieri because I don't think he deserves to lose his job, but sometimes that can have that little impetus just to think, right, we've got to drag you lot over line, because if they get relegated, I think the mental sort of scar that will cause could hit the club for a few years.
When Chelsea won the title and then they limped over the line and they started really badly and Mourinho lost his job, we said at the time Chelsea have limped over the line and you could sense that it wasn't going to start as great. Are we just being wise after the event? Could we tell it towards the end of last season that maybe Leicester needed?
They did. They had a series of 1-0 wins, and it was a bit scratchy. So I guess in retrospect, you could look at that. But the story was just so amazing that nobody's going to pick holes in them at that point.
If you're a winner, you do pick holes. Do you see what I mean? If you concentrate too much on what a fairy tale. Isn't it inevitable that you're not going to be built correctly for the next
Probably,
challenge?
Probably, yeah. But you were saying he should have sold a few players. But, how can you possibly, get rid of Wes Morgan or Danny Drinkwater? I'm not getting enough money to bring in players who are much better. So I think he had to stick with this team. I mean, it's only around now when you think, okay, probably it is time to change a few players. I mean, you've got to give them as much time as possible. And I think it's fair enough to stick with pretty much the same 11.
Shouldn't he? But should he perhaps have against Swansea played exactly the team that had beaten Derby?
No, that wasn't a great game, was it? They stumbled across Derby reserves in extra time.
At this stage, when you're worrying about relegation, you don't have to win in style.
From the outset, they needed a plan B. I think Ranieri should have said, right, we'll go with what we did last season, but if teams work us out here, which, there's only so many times that Mahrez is going to get the ball out wide, cut in on his left foot and whip it. Eventually they were going to get worked out. They needed a plan B, and I don't think they came up with a plan B, and I think now it's almost too late.
As you're listening to me, Daisy, Apple's iPhone disassembly robot, is dismantling an iPhone into lots of recyclable parts. That's how Apple recovers more materials than conventional recycling methods. Thanks, Daisy. There's more to iPhone.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. The future isn't scary. Not realizing its potential, however, could be. Just like on the recruiting trail, I've seen potential come in many forms as a coach. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.
Over to our debate. Is Arsene Wenger a little tired? Very tired. Or hungry for more? I'm going to be terribly naughty and quote myself here. Shall I do that?
Yeah.
Okay. I wrote in the game, the Times on Monday, in the game, I wrote, just to be provocative. There was a time when the Queen was unpopular and the public felt, by and large, that Prince Charles should be given a chance. But by staying put, Her Majesty has won more and more fans and her longevity has become a thing of wonder. Wenger is not quite there yet, but if he is still at the helm in 2025, no one will ever want him gone. Julian, you're French. Go on, discuss.
I mean, the Queen never had to win the league, though. That's the thing. She might have struggled to win the league by herself as well. But I can see why some fans are frustrated and angry and want him to go. And why I tell them all, always the same, including my friends and... It depends who can come next. That's the whole thing. What's the alternative? So the one thing first, Arsene still feel that he can do a great job there. You know, there's no he's tired. He doesn't think he's tired. He doesn't think that he's not doing a good job. He doesn't think that he's not capable of doing even better and winning the league with this squad and everything. So if you're wondering, is he tired? No, he's not. Does he think he's underachieving? No, he's not. Does he think he can still win the league? Yes, he does. The whole thing for me is the alternative. And Bill mentioned a bit the post-Ferguson era at United. It's the same. I'm sure there's no Arsenal fans today who would want 3, 4, 5 years now of troubles and difficulties and having 3 different managers and not qualifying for the Champions League and not doing well and you know, having long spells with no wins, having poor football on the pitch. They wouldn't want that. Surely they would rather have Wenger a bit more, even if that means only a top 4 finish, than having issues like United faced, for example. And I know it's too different, and I know James is probably going to pick on this later, but that's it. If there's someone like Carlo Ancelotti available, and then you think, okay, would Carlo Ancelotti do a better job than Arsene Wenger? Potentially, maybe, yes. Then in fairness, if it's to get someone like David Moyes was at United, I don't think any Arsenal fans would want that.
But don't the Arsenal fans think it's too cosy between the board and the manager? What they want is a manager of great repute who comes in and demands more money and shakes things up and makes sure that Arsenal spend maybe 1 year more than anybody else and get in 3 top strikers. That's never going to happen under Arsene Wenger. Maybe it's not an anti-Wenger thing. It's just we want somebody who's more abrasive and cocky in there.
If Arsene Wenger feels that Kylian Mbappe is worth £80 million, and he has the money available, trust me, he would bid £80 million for Kylian Mbappe. It's just that his value of players sometimes don't match the price that other clubs want for them. And in that case, he said, I've got other options, even in my own squad. I would do something else.
But he would spend the money. You're backing up my point. Instead of thinking he's there relatively short term to bring the title to Arsenal, Wenger is being too good at the housekeeping. He's thinking, looking for value for money.
Didn't in his last year. He thought, right, I'm going to win the title. Who am I going to get? Robin van Persie, right, 24 million. There was one season, Robin, at Manchester United, where even that season, he sort of hit a brick wall after March, but it was almost a selfish kind of 24 million, I want to buy myself the title here. An Arsenal fan that I know goes home and away, hit the nail on the head last week. He said, our biggest problem is we cannot go to the big teams away from home and get results. And he said, that has been our problem for 10 years. And until we solve that problem, until we can get a manager that can tactically, like Mourinho has done in the past, where he's gone to a Manchester City or he's gone to a Liverpool and thought, I'm going to park the bus, or I'm going to do this, or I'm going to have my antics on the sideline. Guardiola can do it. Mourinho can do it. Klopp can do it. Arsene Wenger can't do it.
Well, that's really interesting because Wenger did start to do that, I'll play ugly. And clearly he didn't feel comfortable, so he stopped.
Every time, Chelsea a couple of weeks ago, they just get rolled over away from home at the big clubs, and until they can sort that problem out, they will not win the league.
All right, so are you saying that Wenger should go?
Well, he's going to go, isn't he? It's not, is he going to go? He is going to go. So when does he go? I think Martin Keown made a good point on Match of the Day last night. He's going to go, so Arsenal as a football club need to find a replacement. Even if it's going to take them 2 or 3 years, they need to find a replacement, which is very, very important that you get the right person in. So the football club needs to start it. You know, Arsenal, it's a very, very good football club, Arsenal, and I think this kind of, they're in no man's land. I think they've got a chance they could miss out on the top four this year, and I think that could...
So do you think Arsenal should, as a club, announce... They've sat down and discussed things with Wenger, and he has one more season left.
No, so I think if you do that, the players get in a mindset of, is he our manager, is he not our manager? I just think that they might keep
it secret, but they agree he's going to go when? This summer or next summer?
I think the biggest thing is they need to get somebody in place, a bit like Man City had Guardiola in place, I don't know.
That's a bit insulting to Wenger, isn't it? To say, we'll keep you on until we find the right person. It might be this year, it might be next year, it might be 5 years' time.
Well, what's more important,
Arsene
Wenger or Arsenal Football Club? What's? I think they've got to sit down, I'm sure they do, and I think United did it with Ferguson, they got it wrong with Moyes, Man City have done it, I think they've got it right with Pep. I think Arsenal need to see that they need to make a search now for a replacement for Arsene Wenger.
Yeah, I mean, you can't compare City and Pellegrini with Arsenal and Wenger. I think from what I hear, even talking to people, they seem to think that the Arsenal board are stupid people. They're not stupid people. It's just that you have to treat Wenger with a lot of respect for everything he's done for the club. Whether you think that for the last 10 years it was not good enough, they get that. They do sit with him, and they will probably offer him a new deal. And, you know, it would be down to him to sign it or not. But it was always going to be down to him to stay or to not stay. It was never going to be the board who said, like, you can't say to Ferguson, listen, Alex, I think you have to go now. You don't say to Wenger, listen, mate, I think you have to go now. This just doesn't work like this. This is not Pellegrini. We're talking about Arsene Wenger, 20 years at the club and did amazing things for the club and for English football in general. You don't tell him to go. When he says, listen, I don't feel I can take this club forward anymore, I don't think my message is going through, blah, blah, blah. Whatever the reason, he will say, I think it's the right time for me then to go. And then they would already have a list of who they think would be a good replacement, not just football-wise, but also in terms of off the field, the relationship with the fans, the relationship with the club. It would be someone who looks a bit like Arsene Wenger. And I think Thomas Tuchel, for example, who emotionally is not as extravagant maybe than other big managers, is very much like Arsene Wenger. And I think maybe he would be the right one to follow him. And whether that's next year, in 2 years, in 3 years, in 5 years, in 6 years, or whatever, but you just don't tell Arsene Wenger, it's time for you to go, mate.
Bill, how do you view it, Bill? Because I think Julian's probably right, that the board are not going to tell Arsene Wenger what to do. But
no.
How long can Wenger keep going if every time there's these dips, there are placards saying, we want you out?
Yeah, well, I mean, he certainly looks like he's got the energy for it, at least. You're asking, is he very tired? I mean, 67 and Ferguson went on till 71. It's a sort of analogy with Leicester in a way. You think, would Leicester fans take being champions and relegation over the course of 2 years? And you think, yes, they would definitely take title and relegation because they've enjoyed that great high. And I think that's the frustration for Arsenal fans. They just don't get any great highs. Since they last won the title in 2004, they've won the third most points in the Premier League, way ahead of Liverpool in fourth place. So you'd have thought in 12 years there'd have been a couple of titles in there, or just on the balance of probability. But they're just so consistent, and that's the frustrating thing. I think it's almost summed up by Theo Walcott. He's just, to me, he's just not a title-winning player, and he never has been. Obviously, now and again, he looks incredible, but he's just not a title-winning player. 6 or 7 years ago, Arsenal could have said, right, cheerio, off you go. But they gave him long contracts, and they've just kept him there, and he's never going to win them. Players of his standard, they're not going to win the title. On the other hand, they're not going to fall out of the top four either. So it's almost as if Wenger is just happy being third or fourth each year. And you could argue maybe some fans are. I mean, it's like going to the theatre. The Emirates is very comfortable, lovely, comfy seats, amazing arena. You're going to be entertained much more than the average team in the Premier League, without a doubt. They're great to watch, almost always. You know the plot roughly. They're going to finish third or fourth, and you're going to play lots of high-profile games against Barcelona and Bayern Munich over the years as they get through the group stages. So that's the sort of big debate probably between Arsenal fans. Some, you know, some that they kind of the like going to the theatre each week, and some are missing the great highs. And now it's going to be 13 years without winning the league, and some people just think let's just have one title, even if we struggle a bit for a few years.
I get that, but there's something, I don't know what the right word is. It's slightly weird the way there's a fear, it seems to me, pervading the club of dropping, that you might have to drop out the top four in order to grow, to become the team that's hungry for the title. James, do you see what I mean?
I do see what you mean. I can't, where honestly do you think Arsenal are going to drop?
Where?
So Arsene Wenger goes and there's this, you know, I think everyone was worried that what happened to Manchester United when Ferguson left and Moyes came in, but I think it was slightly different because Ferguson left an ageing team. It was almost selfish what Ferguson did. He didn't look, but he knew he was going. He knew he was going well before he actually did, and I don't think he planned for the future. And I think David Moyes came in. It was a little bit unstuck. There was no transfer targets put in place. There was nothing, and he had to pick up an ageing squad. Very, very good manager. And I think everyone at Arsenal is worried, oh, if Arsene Wenger goes, we're going to drop like a stone. I think the infrastructure they've got as a football club, I just can't see that happening. I can't. I'm not saying that they'll challenge for the title straight away, but he's going to go. He's not going to last forever. Nobody does. So, you know, why do it sooner rather than later? Arsene Wenger wins the league next season. Is he going to stay? Well, he's not going to stay forever. So surely that would be the biggest drop, winning the league, then replacing him.
Are we sympathetic to the idea that no one should expect Wenger to leave unless he leaves on an absolute high, and that he's going to, his main motivation isn't a selfish one, really. It's just that he wants to bring something special to the club, and that's when he'll go.
Yeah, I think there's a part of that. There was a time, do you remember, when he was not spending much money? It was because in his head he wanted to do it with the academy and players coming through the academy, and he got really stubborn about that. Then that changed when there was the new stadium. There was a bit more money available. He spent a lot on Ozil and Sanchez and all of that. And I think the quest was always to get that Premier League trophy back. And I think that I could see him, if he does win it again one day, after that being, okay, I got where I wanted. All those people, I proved them wrong because they thought I was finished. They thought I was too old. They thought I was tired. They thought I was not good anymore. I proved them wrong by winning that Premier League in far more difficult way, because it's harder now to win it than 20 years ago. And I've done it. And I think then maybe he would go. But knowing him, I'm not even sure he would go. He said, I can win another one. And then he was still for another 5 years.
Is it fair to say, if you look at Arsene Wenger's 20 years at Arsenal, he had great success from about 96 to 2003 when they had the Invincibles. Is a lot of that success, ain't now it's dried up because he knew the French market very, very well. You look at the players that had all of that, Thierry Henry, Robert Pires, Manuel Petit, Nicolas Anelka. The list could go on and on. That's dried up now because club scouting systems and everything. There's not a, you know, we talk about a player that we know very well, Kylian Mbappe at Monaco, who's the next big world superstar. Every single club is onto him. Where it just seemed in that 90s, Arsene, coming from France, knew, had the insight to where the players were. Always great French players. You know, there's a whole list of them that have come over and done well in the Premier League. As soon as that dried up, that's now finished. You know, that has, to go on invincible, and the team they had was fantastic, to then not win a league after that season is incredible.
Yeah, no, it is. I think he was ahead of his time in terms of recruitment, especially abroad, in terms of
broccoli
tactic, diet, everything. And I think everybody else caught up at some point, which is normal. And when you stay somewhere for so long, that's always the risk. But the thing that hurt me a bit, and you know, he's not my friend, I know him well, but he's not my friend, but you can't be disrespectful. Whether you think that the last 10 years have been, they haven't been 10 years wasted. I'm not sure many people would have done better than he did. But he's a very clever man, and he's a respectful man, and he loves this club, and he loves those players, and he loves the squad. And sometimes he's actually been more loyal. We talked about loyalty before with Ranieri. Yep. He has been too loyal at times. And, you know, I remember him saying, you know, if I go and buy him, that would mean those three there that I already have in my squad that I really like, I'm not going to play much. And I think maybe that has been an issue, but he's not stupid, and he can see everything that's happening in his squad and run him. And I do think that he might get it right while there. But if he doesn't get it right, and if he leaves, let's say in 2 years' time or 3 years' time, you know, and not winning it again, it's just kind of tarnished everything else he did.
Football is the most cutthroat industry you can possibly imagine. If he's going to come out with that attitude, and or he's already going down that line of, oh, I need to be loyal to him, he's going to be exactly where they're not going to progress as
true.
A football
and
club.
I think
you have got to be, a bit like Pep's now, with Pep Guardiola at Man City. Aguero has been there, probably there, since all the money's come into Man City, he's gone, right, I'm giving you a chance, no. He's out of it.
And I think he's
and
made
mistakes.
And
that's what you have to do as a manager.
Yeah, I think he's made mistakes. I think he was far more ruthless earlier in his career than he is now, maybe. And he's made mistakes, but everybody does. Every manager makes mistakes. And I just don't think he should just be judged on, you know, on things like that. I think he's, what he's done for this club is going far beyond just the last 10 years or just winning two FA Cups in 10 years.
All right, OK, let's finish this. I want your predictions on where Arsenal will finish in the FA Cup, Champions League and the Premier League, and whether what you predict will happen is sufficient for him to stay in the job for another season. Julian?
They will finish third in the league. They will beat Bayern Munich in the Champions League but lose in the quarterfinals to PSG. And they will win the FA Cup.
You've got insight to the draw.
And they will
win the FA Cup.
I've seen all those games before anyway. And he will stay, of course.
Bill?
I think they'll be fourth in the league. I'll probably get knocked out by Bayern Munich. And they'll get past Sutton, but they'll get knocked out in the FA Cup semi-finals. And he'll stay, I'll predict.
James?
I'm going to say they're going to finish fifth in the league.
Ooh.
Oh. I think Chelsea will beat them at Wembley in the semi-finals of the FA Cup. I think they'll get past Bayern Munich because I think Bayern Munich are in transition at the moment. They're not the side that they were, and it'll be the same merry-go-round.
Alison, what do you
think? Well, I'm going to predict that they fall to Sutton, and we have the biggest shock in football for 10 years, and he's sacked.
Absolutely no chance.
Right, now it's time for quick hits. These are for the uninitiated. Quick questions with very quick answers. Gab Marcotti uses gadgets to enforce. I don't. I just raise an eyebrow and everybody is very good. Never mind whether Tony Pulis called Ryan Shawcross a loser or not. West Brom are heading for a top eight finish. How has that happened, James?
Because he's a very, very good manager. And I think outside the top six or seven, the rest of them, I think he just knows how to get his side, you know. Over that 30-point barrier come March time, then he'll just keep going. I think he's one manager that gets the most out of the squad that he's given time and time again. It can't be a fluke because he does it every single season. Not quite sure what's gone on with Ryan Shawcross. I think there's a bit of gamesmanship, maybe trying to poach him.
Bill, Burnley gained a hard-fought point at home, but should Antonio Conte have made changes sooner against a resilient, deep-lying team?
I'm not sure, really, he should have made their changes. He did change to a back four for the last 20 minutes, but there was no great improvement there. He also brought on Fabregas for Matic after 67 minutes. Perhaps he could have brought on Fabregas a bit early. Matic wasn't having the greatest of games. He sort of gave away the free kick a bit clumsily. But overall, it wasn't a terrible result for Chelsea, given Burnley's home form. So I think Conte's approach was fine, really.
Sunderland's sizzle against Palace and then Wilt against Southampton. Please explain, Julian.
Maybe Crystal Palace are not that good. And I mean, everybody beats them anyway, so we shouldn't be surprised that even Sunderland beat them. But everything went Sunderland's way on that day for sure. And Southampton are a much better team than Crystal Palace. And it was always going to be harder, you know, I thought, for Sunderland, even at home, against Southampton. And Southampton, I thought, played extremely well on Saturday. So overall, I think the two results... And let me tell you something. It's the first time in over 60 years that a team in the top flight win away 4-0 and then lose away in the next game 4-0 as well. Would you believe this? Oh, it's in my book of stats somewhere.
See, Bill, this is the impact you have in pubs and podcasts around the world, I think. It would be remiss not to mention Manolo Gabbiadini, who scored twice at the Stadium of Light. James, are you impressed by Southampton's new striker?
I'm very impressed. Certainly second goal, although it was at the Stadium of Light at the moment, which They seem to be collapsing, don't they? Quickly, but three goals in two games, very, very impressive. It's an interesting player. He's a very, very good young player coming through at Italy. Played a lot of games for Italy under 21s, but never really kicked on. Maybe Southampton's a place that he will do.
Bill, what should Big Sam do with his team in the 2 weeks between now and their next game at home to Middlesbrough?
Well, he's running out of things to do, really. They've had he thinks back to when he won the that one game in charge of England. It's all gone wrong since then, sacked by them. And then he thought, well, at least he's going to come back and save Crystal Palace. But he's done nothing of the sort so far. He brought in a sports psychologist. So maybe for the next 2 weeks, just get the psychologist to spend all his time with Zaha and Townsend, the two wingers. I mean, at their full potential there, Champions League standard players, no doubt about it. So I mean, if they were to play the top of their game, then Palace would sail away from the bottom three. But and they've not won at home in 5 months, and Middlesbrough are a beatable opponent. So if they don't beat them, then the writing will be on the wall.
Indeed it will. Edin Dzeko's penalty misses for Roma have gone viral, Julian. Is he right to say he'll give up trying to take them?
Yeah, he missed the last two as well, but the one this weekend where I was not really sure what was happening. If you haven't seen it, go and have a look, because he takes his time, then the ref tell him to go, he still waits again, and then he fluffs it completely. However, he's having a fantastic season with 18 league goals already. He's the Dzeko that we knew at Wolfsburg before. He's so spell at City, sorry. So we can forgive him for that poor penalty at the weekend. Ali, one for you. Danny Coley was at Turf Moor preparing for Lincoln City's fifth-round FA Cup tie. What would he have learned?
Well, I spoke to Danny Coley straight after the draw for the fifth round, and he said he'd just been chatting to Neil Harris, the Millwall manager, because they were both in the hat for the draw and they're mates. And Neil Harris had said to Coley, the fixture you do not want above all others is to go to Turf Moor. And I thought, well, that's a bit of an exaggeration. There are plenty of other tough ties you could get. And then the first time I've seen Burnley for 90 minutes after that conversation with Cowley, I realised exactly what Neil Harris meant. Because Neil Harris said to him, they're at you all the time. It's impossible. I think that sums Burnley up completely. They were relentless. I've seen teams close down more expensive clubs or teams that are on a good roll and try and make life difficult. I thought Burnley's organisation, relentlessness and intelligence when they were able to break was incredibly impressive. So I think probably Neil Harris might have been right. The last place you wanted to go in the fifth round was Turf Moor.
It's a different mindset at the weekend. That will be one of Burnley's hardest games. I've played in these games and they're not easy to play in, because they were excellent yesterday, Burnley against Chelsea. I thought it was one of the best performances I've seen, you know, this season. But all of a sudden, they're the underdogs, and I think they play to the underdogs. You know, the crowd get behind them. But all of a sudden, you've got Lincoln at home, a non-league, you're the favourites, right? Come, we expect you now to win. And it's just, adds a little bit of pressure.
Well, I wish I'd given that answer now, James. That sounded more intelligent, didn't it? Thank you.
Sorry.
That's all for now. Many thanks for today's guests, James Scowcroft, Julian Laron and Bill Edgar. Remember, it's just £12 for a 12-week trial. Just search The Times online. And please press that subscribe button wherever you choose to download your podcasts. And leave a review and a happy emoji on iTunes if you're listening on an Apple device. Goodbye.
The Game is brought to you by The Times. For more information and more podcasts from The Times, head to thetimes.co.uk.
VoiceOver describes what's happening on your iPhone screen.
VoiceOver on. Settings.
So you can navigate it just by listening.
Books. Contacts. Calendar. Double tap to open. Breakfast with Anna from 10 to 11.
And get on with your day. Accessibility. There's more to iPhone.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.